The senior council appointed a committee of graduating students to select the university's commencement speaker. It is my privilege to invite two seniors, Evan McQuernz and Marissa Saltzman, to come up to the podium to introduce our commencement speaker this evening.
On behalf of the Senior Council and Commencement Speaker Selection Committee, it is our distinct honor and pleasure to introduce to you our most distinguished guest speaker, Mr. Richard Arnold II.
As children, we all dreamed about going into space. Ricky Arnold went on and achieved this dream. A native of Maryland, Mr. Arnold earned his bachelor's degree from Frostburg State University and then received his master's in marine, estuarine, and environmental science in 1992, right here from the University of Maryland.
After teaching science to John Hanson Middle School, located close by in Waldorf, Maryland, Mr. Arnold went on to teach in various schools internationally, from West Papua, Indonesia, to Casablanca American School in Morocco. Ricky Arnold has seen and taught in some of the farthest corners of the world.
After learning about a NASA opportunity in 2004, Mr. Arnold went on to train and to research in Aquarius, the world's only undersea laboratory which simulates a lunar outpost. In 2009, Mr. Arnold completed a space mission to the International Space Station on the shuttle Discovery, in which he and his team logged 202 orbits and 5.3 million miles in 12 days, 19 hours, and 29 minutes. As part of that mission, Mr. Arnold participated in two spacewalks to set the new solar wings on the International Space Station.
Class of 2011, President Lowe, faculty, family, and friends, it is with great honor and pleasure that we introduce the University of Maryland's winter commencement speaker, someone who is out of this world, teacher and astronaut Ricky Arnold.
Thanks, Evan and Marissa. I'm honored to be here to share this special day with you. It so happens that I grew up just down the road, literally just down Greenbelt Road, so it's also great to be back home. When I received the call asking me to come talk to you, I was very excited to have the opportunity to share my perspective gained from 11 years abroad, 10 days living under the ocean, and 13 very special days in orbit. Well, almost 13 days. You reminded me it was 12 point something. Imagine my horror when that very next day I read an article in the Wall Street Journal in which the writer laments an astronaut's inability to adequately convey what it is like to be in space. I'll quote him here. "I think if I had got a crack at traveling above the atmosphere, I'd be able to convey my all better than most of these guys. I don't know whether their training or whatever self-discipline it takes to become an astronaut sucks the poetry out of them. I've been disappointed by their inability to evoke the sublime." His timing was outstanding. In fairness, the author may have a point. We do spend years getting ready for a trip into space. We want everything to be as expected. That is what ensures mission success. The unexpected is the feel, the childlike joy of being weightless, and the view out the windows. Still, just those two changes are enough to make the whole experience almost dreamlike. And each of you understands the difficulty of putting your most vivid dreams into words. 13 days later, you land in Florida. You receive a hero's welcome, and within a day, I'm back home where the grass needs to be cut, the garage door still won't close the whole way, and the shutters still need a coat of paint. 2 days after watching the aurora dance beneath you in these magnificent hues of pink and green, you find yourself sitting in a Target parking lot, asking yourself, was that real? Was I really there? And today I want to focus my time talking to you about my experience in space, because that's what I spent a lot of time thinking about and dreaming about when I was a small boy growing up just down the road. And there are three thoughts that I would like to share with you. First, the night sky. We launched into night from dusk, which had its own kind of magic for the viewers on the ground. But in space, it was surreal. I've worked at sea. I've lived in the Arabian Peninsula and traveled across the Sahara. And the night sky in those places is magical. But free of Earth's atmosphere, the night sky takes on a third dimension. The Milky Way explodes into an array of light, and you can literally see which stars are closer and which are further away. You sense the frontier, and in my opinion, a hint of our future, and it is limitless. And just when you begin, and I only mean begin, to wrap your head around what you are seeing, a thin crescent of blue begins to penetrate the darkness. It is dawn on orbit. The sun flashes brilliant over the horizon, revealing a hue of blue that quite simply takes your breath away. The Earth that has been lurking in darkness fully reveals itself in the window below. My second point is that our Earth is truly a jewel when viewed from space. The term blue planet, while literally true, really doesn't do it justice, because the color of blue is something that I have never seen anywhere else in nature. It is warm and a penetrating blue, with a brilliance that overwhelms the window and, quite frankly, my vocabulary. This blue is only broken by an overlay of clouds, some soft and white, others dark and menacing, and an occasional pass over land. We are an ocean planet. The continents, those not obscured by massive thunderstorms, flashing brilliant in our window, lighting us from below, are largely desert, revealing their own palette of browns and reds. There's an occasional collection of green circles of irrigation, while humanity huddles along the coasts of rivers, lakes, and the sea. The Earth itself initially appears a mighty organism. But upon closer inspection, you realize that perhaps it is a bit more frail than you assumed. The atmosphere, relative to the diameter of the Earth, is ridiculously thin. And there is simply no way we can be pumping the exhaust from millions of automobiles, power plants, and factories into it without consequence. From orbit, we've been able to witness the retreat of our glaciers. Where rivers meet the sea, we watch as the erosion of our topsoil carries away our ability to farm and feed our people. Environmental disasters such as the Deepwater Horizon oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico are clearly visible from our perch in orbit. In the north, coal soot in the snow shows our large industrial area's footprints, with thin tendrils of black soot following the railroad tracks out of the industrial areas. Humanity's imprint is clear, and a lot of it isn't good. This imprint, much like our view of Earth from space, has no political boundaries. We don't see any boundaries up there. And from space, it's very apparent that we are all in this together. The final perspective is one of hope. Once we launch, it becomes obvious that we are chasing a star, the International Space Station, that is always lurking out in front of us, growing larger in our window with each passing hour. The ISS, much like Earth, is an oasis in the hostile environment of space. If laid out on campus, it would cover the football field at Byrd Stadium and has a living space about the size of a 747 jumbo jet. It travels around the Earth approximately 220 miles high, give or take, traveling over 17,000 miles an hour. It was built by 16 nations at locations around the world and assembled for the very, very first time in space. It has been staffed by an international crew of up to six astronauts, for 24 hours a day, 365 days a year, for over 10 years now. It was built and is serviced by spacecraft from Europe, Japan, Russia, and the United States. And unlike certain times on Earth, we in the space business understand that we can only live on this small, man-made oasis if we cooperate. Anything else would bring the whole endeavor to a halt. I was fortunate to be able to go outside the ISS on two spacewalks. Our spaceship is the world's smallest spaceship. Everything is self-contained. And though our spacewalks are very, very busy, there were a couple moments where I could stop, and it was quiet, and all I could hear was the fan gently blowing air across my face, and I could let go of the ISS, float alongside the most amazing machine ever built by humanity, traveling over 17,000 miles an hour, watching our beautiful Earth pass beneath my feet. Folks, I have hope. If this turtle from Bowie can fly alongside the ISS and watch the Earth pass by his feet, there is no limit to what each of you can do. And though our planet is small and our challenges are big, if we work together, we, and I mean the collective we, the collective global we can accomplish absolutely anything. If we, the International Space Station team, can build an outpost in space where one side relies on the metric system and the other side on the imperial, requiring us to fly two sets of tools, and it all still works, I'm not making that up, we can accomplish absolutely anything. We requires teamwork. People will be important to you along your way. You are not going to do it all on your own. We implies a shared vision and a shared sacrifice. We requires honesty and integrity. You must be true to yourself and those around you and be willing to speak hard truths when it is necessary. It also requires the infinitely more difficult task of listening to hard truths. We requires the knowledge that our journey, humanity's journey, is generational. Ultimately, accepting the concept of we means that the next generation, you folks, is all that we really leave behind. There is immense power in that thought and immense responsibility. And I believe that you understand this and are ready for the challenge because you have learned this here, in this place. For as Marshall McLuhan said, there are no passengers on spaceship Earth. We are all crew. I wish each of you the best on your voyage. Congratulations, and thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Arnold. On behalf of the graduating class, we'd like to present you with this token of our appreciation for speaking to us this evening.
This is the University of Maryland's high Maryland cap that we hope you will wear, and you will serve as a reminder of this wonderful evening. Thank you.
Thank you.